flies and gnats. Not to mention, they're also an important food source for aquatic animals.
But probably the most important role they play is as water quality monitors. If they're not thriving, it could indicate larger problems of groundwater contamination from pesticides and urban runoff.
And speaking of insects, finally this week, if you're an arachnophobe, you have our permission to turn down the radio. This story might give you the willies.
If you thought a good way to avoid spiders might be to get in the water, turns out that spiders are quite impressive mariners and can sail across large bodies of water like ships, using their legs to catch the wind and their silk to tether to a floating object.
That's according to a new study by researchers at the University of Nottingham's Spider Lab, published in the journal BMC Evolutionary Biology. The scientists found that when placed in water, more than a third of spiders adopted yoga-like postures that allowed them to use the wind to glide across the surface.
For example, the spiders did handstands to allow their abdomens to catch the wind, while others simply ran across the surface, essentially walking on water. The research helps explain why spiders have been amongst the first to colonize new habitats and why many species are found all over the globe.
Scientists already knew that terrestrial spiders had the ability to travel through a technique called ballooning, where the creatures use their silk to fly through the air. But a downward-facing dog on water? That's a new one. This Week in Water is a production of H2O Radio and is sponsored by Colorado WaterWise. Learn more ColoradoWaterWise.org.
Heroin use is on the rise, according to a new report by the Federal Centers for Disease Control. The rates of past year heroin use in the U.S. increased across almost all study groups. However, the greatest increases were among those that historically have had lower rates of heroin use, doubling among women and more than doubling among non-Hispanic whites. Rates remained the highest among males, people aged 18 to 25 years, those with incomes of less than $20,000 per year, people in urban areas, and people with no health insurance or on Medicaid. The CDC says that greater availability, increased purity, and lower prices for heroin have likely contributed to the increase in use. Heroin overdose rates have also risen, though at least one other drug was involved in more than half of these deaths, particularly antidepressants, tranquilizers, and alcohol. The CDC concluded that increased access to effective treatment is necessary to deal with the problem. They also support broader availability of the drug naloxone for prevention of overdose deaths.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises.
For WIN, I'm Joanne Powers. Several bills introduced by Senate Republicans are targeting longshore workers at the nation's busiest ports. Among the bills are provisions to collect port productivity statistics and institute sanctions against unions where work slowdowns are suspected. Lindsay McLaughlin is legislative director of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union.
It's aimed at undermining the collective bargaining process. It's aimed at stopping collective action by union members to better their lives. We fought hard for decent health care coverage, pension, working conditions. All these things that we fought for could easily leave us if legislation, as they're talking about, comes to fruition.
The 1947 Taft-Hartley Act gives the president the power to order port workers back to work under conditions that are dangerous. A bill from Colorado Senator Cory Gardner would extend those powers to state governors.
Once they extend it to governors for port workers, watch out, mine workers and others, that have an impact on the national economy.
Another bill from Idaho Senator James Risch would decertify the union completely if statistics showed a slowdown.
His is like the nuclear option. He's taking the union completely out of representing the workforce. Obviously, there's a bullseye on our longshoremen.
Transit workers in Milwaukee have returned to work after a three-day work stoppage affecting tens of thousands of bus riders. Amalgamated Transit Union Local 998 President James Macon apologized to the riding public for the inconvenience, but says more work stoppages are possible if transit system officials continue to refuse arbitration. Last week, workers overwhelmingly rejected management's last offer over issues of security, bathroom breaks, and a plan to expand the use of part-time workers. Widely seen as a victory for the Greek working class, Greek voters on Sunday rejected a deal from creditors that demanded significant cuts to social services and pensions in the economically struggling nation. Bill Fletcher, former assistant to the president of the AFL-CIO, says the results were thrilling, but it can't end there.
We can celebrate this victory, but we have to understand that there's no reason to believe the EU is going to give up its objective of trying to crush Greece, and specifically crush the Greek working class. We're dealing with international financial institutions and entities that are incredibly vindictive. They don't want a positive example for the workers of Spain, of Portugal, of Italy, of Germany for that matter. Solidarity with the Greeks is going to be very, very important, particularly in the EU countries. The workers there are going to have to put an incredible amount of pressure on their respective governments to make sure that they back down from what many people have called an attempt at a financial coup d'etat.
Workers Independent News is brought to you by the American Federation of Teachers and its 1.6 million members working to reclaim the promise of public education, health care, and public services for our students, their families, and our communities. More information online at aft.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Yesterday, President Obama gave an update at the Pentagon on the long-term campaign against ISIL. Here is a clip of Obama's speech on plans to intensify the campaign.
And that includes the work that brings me here today, our mission to degrade and ultimately destroy the terrorist group ISIL. This will not be quick. This is a long-term campaign. But today it's also important for us to recognize the progress that's been made. Our coalition's now hit ISIL with more than 5,000 airstrikes. We've taken out thousands of fighting positions, tanks, vehicles, bomb factories, and training camps. We've eliminated thousands of fighters, including senior ISIL commanders. Indeed, we're intensifying our efforts against ISIL's base in Syria, the heart of ISIL that pumps funds and propaganda to people around the world. Now, all this said, our strategy recognizes that no amount of military force will end the terror that is ISIL unless it's matched by a broader effort, political and economic, that addresses the underlying conditions that have allowed ISIL to gain traction. They have filled a void, and we have to make sure that as we push them out, that void is filled. We're going to work day and night with allies and partners to disrupt terrorist networks and thwart attacks, and to smother nascent ISIL cells that may be trying to develop in other parts of the world. So our efforts to counter violent extremism must not target any one community because of their faith or background, including patriotic Muslim Americans who are our partners in keeping our country safe. That said, we also have to acknowledge that ISIL has been particularly effective at reaching out to and recruiting vulnerable people around the world, including here in the United States, and they are targeting Muslim communities around the world. As I've said before, and I know our military leaders agree, this broader challenge of countering violent extremism is not simply a military effort. Ideologies are not defeated with guns, they're defeated by better ideas, a more attractive and more compelling vision. So the United States will continue to do our part by working with partners to counter ISIL's hateful propaganda, especially online. We'll constantly reaffirm through words and deeds that we will never be at war with Islam. We're fighting terrorists who distort Islam and whose victims are mostly Muslims. But around the world, we're also going to insist on partnering with Muslim communities as they seek security, prosperity, and the dignity that they deserve. It's going to be up to Muslim communities, including scholars and clerics, to keep rejecting warped interpretations of Islam and to protect their sons and daughters from recruitment. Our mission to destroy ISIL and to keep our country safe will be difficult. It will take time. There will be setbacks as well as progress. But as President and Commander-in-Chief, I want to say to all our men and women in uniform who are serving in this operation, we are proud of you, and you have my total confidence that you're going to succeed.
Last week, Egyptian authorities arrested four journalists. The journalists are currently being held pending investigation of spreading false information, working for the supposedly banned news network Al Jazeera, and belonging to the banned Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is an Islamist religious, political, and social movement that launched a political party in 2011. Their political party got Mohamed Morsi elected as Egypt's first democratically elected president. However, after the overthrow of Morsi in 2014, the Muslim Brotherhood has since been declared a terrorist group. Sharif Mansour at the Committee to Protect Journalists says that the crackdown on the press is deepening at a time when the public needs independent reporting on the security threats that Egypt is facing. On Sunday, an anti-terrorism bill was announced, which would impose a mandatory minimum of 2 years in prison for journalists accused of covering terrorist operations. Sharif Mansour commented on the bill, saying that journalists' ability to report and investigate in Egypt is already severely hampered by security forces. If adopted, this law will mean that the only permissible narrative on certain stories is that of the state.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imemc.org. Israeli soldiers ransack homes in the West Bank and kidnap civilians. Meanwhile, political prisoner starts an open-ended hunger strike. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli soldiers kidnapped early on Monday 13 Palestinians in different parts of the occupied West Bank, including several teenagers in Jerusalem, in massive home invasions. In addition, soldiers kidnapped two Palestinians near the Karim Abu Salem, Karim Shalom crossing after crossing the border fence with Gaza and took them to unknown destination. Also on Monday, the Palestinian Political Prisoner Society said that a Palestinian prisoner held by the Israeli army in the Negev detention center began a hunger strike. Daoud Hamadan began his hunger strike in protest of administrative detention policy of the Israeli military he is held under since June of last year. Last week, Khadr Adnan, a political prisoner held by Israel, ended a 55-day hunger strike, also against the practice of administrative detention. The Israeli military agreed to release Adnan on July 12th. Israel's army uses the administrative detention policy to hold Palestinians for unlimited time without charges or trial. In other news, Israeli security forces have arrested six Palestinian Bedouins from the same family from the Negev after accusing them of supporting the Islamic State group, the Israeli Internal Security Service reported. Two men who are relatives of those arrested have joined ISIS and are fighting in Syria, the sources added. Israeli sources claim that more than 30 Palestinians with Israeli citizenship have joined ISIS in Syria. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Jewish Maui and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Shade Samuelson, Emily Asman, Jim Thompson, Doug McVeigh, and Cliff Verla. Our engineer is Sequoia Wright. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local news stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Nicole Weinstock.
And I'm Doug McVeigh. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, I'm the guest host for Wednesday Talk Radio. We speak with Haven Wheelock, Syringe Exchange Program Coordinator with Outside In, about harm reduction, overdose prevention, and local efforts to reduce the risk of HIV/AIDS and hepatitis transmission. At 9 on Political Perspectives, host Roberta Hall speaks with Mary Christina Wood, Faculty Director of the Environmental and Natural Resources Law Center at the University of Oregon School of Law, about her book, Nature's Trust, Environmental Law for a New Ecological Age. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 on The Dirtbag, host Glenn Anderson and guest Jim Gilbert talk summer pruning, watering in hot weather, and apricots. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
And stay tuned now for Preference, hosted by Alan Silver.